Oh, you brave soul! You're in for a ride that you can't even imagine on this week's episode of Well, actually, it's not going to be tryhards this week, because after going 59 consecutive weeks without any of us missing a week, the summer schedule has gotten the best of us. Brian is going to be away for the show tonight. It's just going to be Matt and myself. So we've talked about this behind the scenes, and when one of us can't be here, we're going to do a derivative podcast called Byhards. So this is episode one of Byhards. Byhards is going to be a lot different than Tryhards. This is, Matt, you're a big fan of the MCU and all of the TV shows and everything going on. Byhards will be a non-continuity contribution to the Tryhards family of sort of brands and podcasts. We'll just put it that way. So this is not Tryhards episode 60. That'll be coming up next week. So did we do 59 last week?
Yeah.
So Tryhards episode 60 will be coming up next week when Brian gets back. Whether it's Matt who's away or I'm away, and Matt and Brian record a show, whenever it's Byhards, there'll be non-continuity episodes. But that being said, it's going to be Matt and I hanging out this week. Just a very relaxed, we're going to let our hair down, talk about our pre-release, talk about some financials that came off of the pre-release announcements. Not a ton went on in the Magic World this week because of pre-release weekend. Matt, it's a little different in that we're not gearing up for a Pro Tour that's now just 3 weeks away. People are going to be drafting at their LGSs this week for release weekend, most likely, and it'll be a chance for us to just relive our experiences, talk about those, and hopefully engage you in what happened with yours as well. But we are going to start with, what are you drinking? Okay, so there's one holdover. Vodka tonics for me as we talk this out, Matt.
Why are you doing the vodka tonics? Just because it's nice and hot outside and you're going to be working?
Yeah, after we're done recording this, I got to go do an hour and a half or so of landscaping over at my rental property. So hopefully I won't get like too beard up, and just a couple of light vodka tonics and I can still put in a little bit of work. And it's warm here in the Midwest. And we killed the beer that was in the fridge yesterday after I had sweated it out. Here I'm working on a furniture rehab project, and we're also working on some landscaping stuff at our place. And then I decided to go all in and fire up the grill, of course, because it's a Sunday. So I went through all the beer in the fridge for that. So vodka tonics it is. What are you having in Louisville, man?
Well, I am drinking this. I've drank on the show once or twice before. It's the UINTA Brewing Company out of Salt Lake City. It's the Hop Nosh IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely love this IPA. It's light. It's nice. I mean, it's one of those that just doesn't, you know, it's hoppy, but it doesn't have that overly, like, sit in your stomach forever taste to it.
Sure. Doesn't kind of feel like you've walled yourself off with hops. And I'm not going to lie, I think I am participating in the medium that I have been viewing lately. We've been watching two things. We're current on House of Cards on Netflix. We've been going through season 5, and they're always drinking whiskey or scotch. Or if Doug decides to start drinking again, it's always the hard bottle. But I had missed at the time. I was so busy. I had been meaning to get back to it. I'm just now wrapping up season 1 of Jessica Jones. So I might be falling victim to watching her drinking out of the square bottles all the time on the show, and I might be wanting to participate.
That one surprised me. That was really good. Not to get way off topic, but that was a really, really good one. Iron Fist, when you finally get to that one, is not good.
Oh, okay. Now, that is the one I have queued up next, and I did both seasons of Daredevil. I should have done Jessica Jones, but then I got out of the loop. I did Luke Cage, which was good, and then I'm geeked up for Punisher, and we'll see just kind of where it goes from there. They're going to do the Defender stuff as well, which should be cool. But yeah, that's what, maybe I'm just a victim of my environment, watching Jessica Jones drink every square bottle known to man on that show. And so I had to get the Tito's out for this episode.
You can't complain about that at all.
Like, not at all. Not at all.
I've been so busy with work that it's been many a night that I just poured myself a glass of scotch, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is going to go great with my stomach, but I don't care.
Well, when it's over 90 degrees out, scotch is just, this doesn't sound good to me. Any other time of the year, it's the first thing I'm going to go for. But enough about what we're drinking. What'd you play this weekend? I had a chance to play in two pre-releases at my LGS. Matt, I know you played in a standard pre-release and a two-headed giant pre-release. What did you find fun about the set? What did you find frustrating about it? I know you had one pool in particular that kind of frustrated you this weekend.
Well, my singular pool was I made the comment to you and I made the comment to some of the local players. I decided to play in one of the smaller stores. I think there was like 20, 22 people there just because the other one started. I didn't want to go the midnight one because then I'm worthless all weekend. I'm too damn old for that. I figured that out last time. It was a nightmare to play in that midnight one.
Oh, absolutely.
And they had at the midnight one, they had like 90 some people. So they got done at like 9 a.m. or something ridiculous. And so I decided to go to a smaller one. I'm like, you know what? It'll be like five rounds. If I get a bad pool, it's not a big big problem or anything. It turned out really, really fun. It's the most fun I've had in a while because it was nice and quiet in the shop. I met some new people. It's a shop, too, that somebody had – one of the local guys had been bugging me to go down to because he's like, you know, it's kind of like a laid-back shop. Reminds me of Quincy, except that it was a very welcoming like when I left. It was a very welcoming shop. It was just kind of like nice, laid back, nothing crazy going on. But I made a mention to a couple people. I said, you know, I've probably built between 100 and 200 seal pools in my life, maybe more, probably more. And this one I had was probably the hardest one just because it was all over the place. I ended up going red-white, kind of like a red-white aggro, and my deck just took a crap all over my face. When I won... I won because I actually drew my lands, and when I lost because I was stuck. Like in one match, I mulled a four both times to find a single hand that had lands in it. And I was running 16 lands, so I was running a little light, but I only had 2 4 drops and 2 5 drops, and the rest were threes and below. I'm sorry, 3 4 drops and 2 5 drops, and the rest were threes and below. So it crapped all over me. But I had a ton of fun. The sealed format seems a little bomby to me, unless you get that god kind of like aggro, hyper aggro. During the two-head giant, we had just, I would call it an above average pool, but the two matches we lost, we played four rounds and then dropped because we went 2-2 and they weren't going to play top eight, and it was on Sunday. They started at 4, so you know the tournament was still going to go until 11 or 12 o'clock on a Sunday. But the pools we had were above average, but the ones we lost, one of them had in one of their decks, they had Glorybringer, 2 Scarab Gods, and Archdemon or Archfiend of Ithnir. And so, you know, when we exiled the first invocation one, then of course, you know, he's just like, oh, here's my Scarab God. And I was like, oh, great, he's got 2. And I actually made the comment to him. I'm like, and they were very nice, and I don't want to accuse them of cheating at all, but I made the comment to him. I'm like, you know, like, I almost want to say that's too good to be true. He goes, that's exactly what I said. Him and his wife were playing, and they were super nice, but he said, that's exactly what I said. So when I opened that pack that had an invocation Scarab God and a Scarab God in it, I called Jeremy over, which is one of the guys, and he goes, I want you to watch me open the rest of my packs so you know that these packs are good. I'm like, that was probably the smart thing to do. So we lost to that one, and then in the other one, we lost to the god that spits out Locust. Which one is that one?
The Locust God. Yeah, that's yeah. Really good. I saw a couple of those open this weekend. The fact that those 1/1s have haste is just really good. I mean, doing it at instant speed is one thing to set up the pseudo-haste, so your opponent doesn't have that window to hit you with a sorcery. But the fact that they just flat out have haste, like, that's really good.
Yeah, you just untap and you're like, I play my, you know, random draw spell or something. And then they're like, okay. You know, you just get beat down like super quick. Being able on the Scarab God, being able to pull stuff from your opponent's graveyard is just a beating. I mean, we killed we exiled his first Scarab God. We killed his Glorybringer. Because my partner, Nick, he had like – it was maybe like 10 threats in his deck, and then it was just all awesome removal, including the one that does every opponent loses X life, and it's the split card. It's the red-black split card.
Cut to Ribbons, then, yeah.
Yeah, we had Cut to Ribbons, and so that's why I say I believe it was above average. But like both our promo was – my promo was terrible. It was the cycler one that lets you cast cards from your graveyard that have cycling. But then his promo, I was running a blue-white deck, and his promo was the Exile Angel. So not the one that has Eternalize, but the one you just exert to exile a card.
Yeah.
And we just got crapped all over. But he had his – we had exiled that first Scarab God and killed his Glorybringer. And then he plays the other one and just gets his Glorybringer right back out of his graveyard. I'm like, okay.
And you don't lose anything because Glorybringer's a 4/4 anyway. Yeah. So you paid that bet. That was a better Glorybringer because it was a 4/4 for four when he activated it. Oh, yeah. In my last match, so I played in two pre-release events over the weekend. The early one was the one I sent you the picture of. I had just a control player's dream black-white deck. I had Bantu's Last Stand, Hour of Revelation, and Overwhelming Splendor all in the same deck. All I was missing was a real good control creature to help me finish. I had to kind of just dirtle around until I had enough stuff on the board. Unsurprisingly, every match that I cast Overwhelming Splendor, I won. So, yeah. You know, one-sided humility seems good. But I only ended up going 2-2 with that deck, and it was because it was a little too dirtly. The creatures played out without having swept your opponent's board with one of the sweepers and then just having your creatures to take on whatever's left. My creatures just pound for pound weren't good enough. In the evening event that I played, I want to play at pre-releases hot messes. That's the way I have fun. I want to take the best cards from each color. I don't care if I'm playing three color, four color. I want to grab the cards that are power level at the top of the curve and then try to make them work. That's how I enjoy with my pre-releases. And I thought, you know what? Black, white, I had some powerful cards in the first one, but I wasn't greedy enough, Matt. You're the same way with limited. You love being greedy. And I love being greedy, especially at pre-release. I thought, you know what? I wasn't myself. That's why I didn't win. So I'm playing, and I opened up a fantastic 90th percentile on the curve, maybe more pool in the evening event. It was so good that I had two complete decks separate from each other. All I was missing for the dream Grixis control deck was a top end finisher. Whether it was any one of the gods or a bolus, if I would have gotten that as the promo or in one of the packs, it would have been unbelievable. I had five great utility creatures, 12 quality pieces of removal, and like four card draw spells. All I needed was that one thing to let me finish the game, so I had no capstone for that pyramid. What could have been? What could have been? But what I did have also in that same pool, and I have to thank Chris Wolfmeyer, who was opening packs across from me. He is the consummate aggro player at the shop. And so I was trying to put together this blue, white, black, red, four-color hot mess, but everything's above the limit on the power curve, where I just wanted to play, like, the 22 absolutely best cards in the pool. And he saw what I was doing, and he's the consummate aggro player, as I mentioned. He said, you have a red-white aggro deck that I would kill for in Sealed. So he said, just cut the black and the blue, play these six cards. I said, those feel like that's just a bear. Like, that's a 2/2 for two. Like, that feels terrible. I could be playing this other thing. He's like, well, in this situation, it could make you an extra card. It's the one that you exert to make a 1/1 vigilant. It's white. You make a 1/1 vigilant soldier, whatever. I'm like, that's a nonbo with my Throne of the God Pharaoh. And he's like, don't even get me started that you have that on top of everything else. So I was like, all right. So we put this together. He gave me some advice on what he would do, and I made a deal with him. I said, I will play the deck this way until I lose a game. Not a match, a single game. 3 hours later, I'm 8-0 in four rounds, and I'm the only 12-point player in the room. So begrudgingly, I had to give it to him that he helped me out. Another player, Zach from Kirksville, had come down with the Kirksville crew. He had a tremendous Esper deck with a Scarab God, and he and I fought tooth and nail to the end. I was the only 12-pointer. He was on 9, so it was kind of a free roll for me to play it out, and I was playing to win. Even when we went to turns, I was playing to win the game because there's not enough on the line at a pre-release in my mind. I wanted to see if I could complete the trick and go 5-0. That's all that mattered to me. I was probably getting first even with a loss and second anyway. I mean, I was hard locked for that. So it was the best match of Magic that I've had to sit down and puzzle my way through probably since we played Legacy with you down in Louisville. So I was not only very glad to play that match and not just ask him if he wanted to draw, but made a point of talking with him about it and through it with him along the way. But Scarab God taking stuff out of my graveyard at instant speed, making it 4/4s, was very good. The way that I finally won through and won the game that I had to win to push that to a third, was doing what every aggro player I think would love to do, which is mighty leaping your lifelink camel to get in for five. So that was a Vorthos win for me, no matter how the rest of the game turned out. So it was a lot of fun, and they were good matches along the way. And I think that there had been cries, though, that this set is underpowered and that attendance was down because of this. This was a hot topic at my LGS, and yes, attendance was down. But when I got to asking around about why people weren't there, they didn't say because the set didn't look very powerful. It's a busy summer weekend. Two people were at a funeral. A third person was on vacation. You know, there were just other things going on that just get in the way in life. Was your turnout at your LGS for those pre-releases up, down, the same? Were people not coming because of the supposed lack of power in the set?
You know, I heard a lot of people complaining about the power level in the set, but I didn't hear anybody that said, you know, hey, I didn't go because of this. The biggest complaint was the time frame, you know, just being in the middle of summer. A lot of people had stuff going on. You know, I mentioned that one, the Two-Headed Giant was on Sunday. And if I wouldn't have promised my partner to go, I wouldn't have gone because I'm like, I have to leave the house at 6 a.m. tomorrow. This is going to be a 6-round event. And it starts at 4:00. So I'm like, what the hell? You know, why can't you start it 2 or 3 hours earlier? And I know why they can't, because they were there till 3 a.m. the night before, you know, doing the other pre-releases. So nobody – it was just purely a time frame thing where it's just the middle of the summer, and a few people didn't come because of that. But everyone did complain. They're like, well, I'm going to open nothing because nothing's worth anything at all. But yeah, I mean – I kind of agree with them, but I don't think this is Dragon's Maze 2.0 by any means. I don't think we're going to have one card that's worth like $45 and then the rest of them are going to be worth a dollar.
It's interesting. Some of the financial spinoff stuff is people are asking where the value is in the set. You've got Bolas, who, depending on what site you look at, is anywhere from 20 to 30. Then you've got the Scorpion God, the Scarab God, and the Locust God. And I think Locust God of the three is pre-ordering for the most. And then you've got some people, I can only imagine it's for EDH, wanting a Razaketh. And other than that, it's kind of, when you look down the retail price list, and I'm going to stress retail price list, there's not but two cards over $10. That's pretty unusual for a large set.
It is very unusual. I think this is going to be more like Dragons of Tarkir, where Dragons of Tarkir started out very similar, where, you know, everyone's just kind of ho-humming. But then it turns out all the Dragon Lords were, you know, good at different times. It reminded me of kind of the Titans from like M12 time frame, where, you know, there was always one that was really good. And then that's the one that was worth money. But there's a lot of sleeper picks. Financially, there's a lot of sleeper picks in Dragons, because a lot of them would fluctuate up and down.
Right.
And but then you had the opposite problem with
I can't help you when you snap your fingers in live time. Which other set? We had Dragon's Maze. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah. Dragon's Maze. Was Dragon's Maze the ones with like Dragon Lord Silmgar?
No. Dragon's Maze was the dud at the end of Return to Ravnica. You had with Khans, and then you had Fate Reforged in the middle, and then Dragons.
What was the one with the green-white guy who turns into an elemental when he dies?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's not
Voice
relevant.
Resurgence.
Yeah.
Which one was
so
he?
Voice was in... Oh, I think Voice was in Dragon's Maze.
Okay.
So that's the only thing
so
to open
I'll
in Dragon's Maze. No, there's no editing on this show.
Oh,
this
okay.
is Byhards, not Tryhards, Matt. So,
well,
yes. So
Dragons.
You had Voice of Resurgence in Dragon's Maze, and it's still the only thing really worth anything.
Yeah, in Dragon's Maze, you never had any cards in Dragon's Maze that were worth anything outside of, you know, Aetherling was worth a little bit, and then you had Voice of Resurgence, but nothing else was worth anything. So I think you're going to go more towards – then Blood Baron. I forgot about that one too. That was worth some money for a while. But other than that, you know, that's where all the value of the set was concentrated in, because the rest of them were duds. But I think it's going to go more towards the Dragons of Tarkir, you know, with the where you're going to have some good cards, because there's a lot of these cards, you know, we've talked about this, they have some good synergy. I mean, they really, really do. And some of them are just really cool. One of them, you know, you mentioned kind of having fun at the pre-release. One of them that I will always regret for months not building is I got three Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs, which is the 04 defender that you can tap and ping a player.
If you have a desert,
I had five deserts, and I almost built that deck. I was so close to, and I should have. But the reason I mentioned this Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs, it's an 04.
Yep.
I mean, yes, it is an artifact, but it's an 04 defender. And some of these deserts, they were showing a lot of utility power, too. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see a control deck coming around where they're running, you know, three or four of these Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs for reach and to control the aggro decks. And then you're running some of the deserts for some of their utility power.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that goes. And I used Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs to great effect in a couple of my pre-releases as well. So that's something that you have to be aware of limited-wise. It's not quite the Shrine deck from, what was that, Eternal Masters or Modern Masters, where they had the Hondens in there, but it's something nonetheless that you had to be aware of. Another card that I wasn't ready for, because I didn't open it in one of my pools, the first one, was Sandblast, and how good that is in white.
Two
and a
really
white
good.
Instant deals five damage to a blocking or attacking creature. Really, that and Electrolyze at a four drop or Electrify, four damage to target creature out of red, three and a red. Those are the only cards that really exist to nullify a lot of the walls. And I was having a hard time in that last round match with my red-white aggro deck getting through his double wall setup. And that's really what drug the game out long enough for him to make a difference with Scarab God. And people forget, I think because so much of the set in Amonkhet has been tempo or aggro-oriented, not quite what we saw the first time we went to Zendikar, but the next fastest limited environment that I've been involved in. People forget the power of a basic wall, especially something like Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs that has a chance to help you end the game.
Look at, you know, what was it, Yoked Ox? That was in play. It was, an 05 for one white. I mean, and this is colorless. I'm not saying that that's going to be an all-star. Don't get me wrong there, but there's a lot of these cards in here that I'm just like, you know, these aren't necessarily super powerful, but they're very, they do what they need to do and they do it well. And a lot of them are I think this leads into the financial portion of it. A lot of them are common and uncommons that they just do things very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the rares, you know, you're never going to see very super expensive rares, but I think you're going to see a lot of like $2 rares in this set, $2, $3 rares. I mean, Kefnet's Last Word just kept blowing me out all day long. Like every time I saw that, it was just, ugh. Our Devastation was another.
I opened one of those. I didn't get to play it because it was in the aggro deck, but I'm so happy I got one of those.
It's so powerful. Even Crested Sunmare, you know, that's a mythic, there's a lot of these cards that I'm just like, what's going on here? Like these, you know, these have to pair with something, but
right,
you know, the value has to go somewhere, and I'm still, tooting the horn for Nimble Obstructionist. We got blown out a couple of times on that beast, you know, having that played against us. And even the, like the resilient Kinra that, you know, just gives +X/+X. That's a mid-range/aggro player's dream right there. That's a 2/2 that pumps one of your creatures and then you can bring it back from the graveyard. I mean, yes, please.
Completely unplayable. Well, at least it was for me in my evening pool. That was my promo card in my evening pool. We had talked about Nimble Obstructionist on the last episode of Tryhards. It was the only card that I set out to target in a trade. So I did pick up one while I was out. I was hoping to pick up a second, but it just didn't work out. But that was a target for mine going in. I wanted one Razaketh for my Reanimator deck, standard Reanimator, not Legacy, and then Nimble Obstructionists for value. And only one Razaketh was open, and he wanted to keep it for his EDH deck, which was fine. I can understand that. But I was able to pick up a Nimble Obstructionist, so just grabbing that right off the hop, I felt like I kind of achieved what I wanted to in picking up those trade targets, because I was picking up other things that were like what I think are going to be power uncommons. And this is something, Matt, that people don't talk about because it's so easy to see them. Sometimes you'll see them left behind in Draft Chaff or whatever. I think this set has a few. You've got a Braid, you've got Supreme Will, And yep. I don't know if Doomfall is going to fit in there or not. I think that's like the bronze medal possibility. But I was just walking around picking up all the Abrades and Supreme Wills that I could, or having people, I was like, oh, you got an uncommon, throw that in.
Yep. No, and that's something, I don't know if I mentioned on the show before, but a lot of times when I know I'm going to be playing a standard format, I'll buy a playset of the commons and uncommons from like eBay or somewhere, and they usually mm-hmm. run me anywhere between $25 and $35.
Totally great and, deal. I've done that before. Yeah. Great value.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you have only one or two uncommons that are worth $1.50 or $2, you still can fill everything out. And if you don't get a chance to draft everything, you're not down there saying, oh, I need four of these uncommons. Here's $3 for four of these uncommons type of thing. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Sean. There's a lot of these, you know, even Steward of Solidarity, the 2/2 for two that you can exert to create a token.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Fervent Paincaster, I mean, a 3/1 pinger, that seems pretty good to me.
What's your opinion on the mana creature, the green mana creature that can make, it's a basically a reflecting pool on a stick, because I think on a stick is the phrase now. We have what, Crucible of Worlds on a stick, now uh-huh. we've got reflecting pool on a stick. What I like about that one though is it's bigger butt, and it can be exerted to make double mana if you're really looking for a specific ramp turn. I think there might be something there, but I think it's a common.
Let me see here. I think it is a common, but yeah, no, every time I saw that, I'm like, man, that seems really, really good. Like, I was thinking more in a constructed mindset, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I was like, that seems really, really good. I did, you know, I was lucky enough at my local store there to pick up some odds and ends. And I got a lot of commons and uncommons people didn't want, just because I didn't order the uncommon set. The winner of the first pre-release, actually, he opened up half a box. And I got one pack just kind of as a consolation prize, and I opened a Scarab God, and Ben looks over at me. He goes, I think you pulled better than my entire box did. And then in our two-head giant, we both opened Uncaged the Menagerie. So we had three mythics. Two of them were Uncaged the Menagerie, completely unplayable in sealed. And then we had a Kefnet as well, which also we did not play because we're just like, I think it's slow and I don't think it's going to do a lot. We probably should have played it, but... No, I was always like, hey, you're going to use those commons and uncommons? And people are like, no, just take it. And there just seems like a lot of these that's I really like. And, you know, I mentioned the deserts earlier. Like, all those deserts, they just – the utility, it just blew my mind. Like, the blue one is probably the least useful that mills. But the rest of them were just very, very powerful whenever we saw them.
Yeah, I saw a couple games finished off by being able to sacrifice the Red Desert to do the 2 damage. Yeah, it's not super mana efficient at 4, but what do you want? It's a land while you need it, and then it essentially says your opponent starts the game at 18 life, is what that read. And if you have an aggressive deck, that's a huge advantage. We know that from Modern. That's one of the reasons that Burn has a percentage of the metagame in Modern, because most Modern games start at 15 life once you count fetches and shocks, and we're not even talking about the Death Shadow decks that want to get themselves down to 4 or 5 in order to help their strategy. So I thought the deserts, I agree with you, surprisingly utilitarian, and I like the way that Wizards has worded it. Almost every card, I'll say every card that I remember seeing says, if you control or have a desert in your graveyard, which means they're worth so much more when you cycle them through, because you still get all the benefit while it's in the yard.
Oh, yeah. And like, I definitely like that they added that in the graveyard, because we were really worried. We're like, you know, are we going to have enough deserts? But then we kind of forgot that the filter land and then the springleaf drum were also deserts, you know, the springleaf drum on land. And then these utility deserts don't come into play tapped, which is a huge deal. I mean, the other ones being able to cycle is nice, but these not coming in and play tap, mm-hmm. which is just amazing. And like the black one is by far the best, I think. I mean, where it puts -1/-1 counters on a creature.
Sure.
And the other thing that struck me on this is it doesn't seem like there's a lot of, I would call them high powered, money cards at the mythic slots. You know, there's a lot of it looks like a lot of EDH chaff and then Nicol Bolas at the mythic slot. And so they'll always be worth money because of EDH, but it looks like everything you're going to want to use in constructed standard is going to be at the rare slot or uncommon slot.
Does Nicol Bolas have enough pull to prop the set up as far as the dollar value goes, because there are people who just collect Planeswalkers, check. People who collect Nicol Bolas theme cards, check. EDH players, Control players in Standard, and then you have just the general allure of the storyline. You have the Vorthos crowd that loves him. Is he going to be beloved enough to really prop up the value of the set, or are we going to see just a disproportionate number assigned to Nicol Bolas God Pharaoh?
You know, I think he might be like that $20. I mean, he's got four abilities. Let's be real here. He's super powerful.
And
yeah,
two
he
of them
seven.
Are pluses, which is cool.
Yes, but he's probably going to be in that $20 range, because I can't see, unless the format as Standard just slows way down, I can't see him playing, being more than one or two of in constructed decks, and then most, all Grixis EDH decks will want him. Everyone who pulled Samut, I saw a lot of people who pulled Samut that are like, I'm not playing this because it's awful. Whether that was correct or not, I don't know. But
well, the two people I know at my pre-release who pulled Samut went 0-2 drop.
Yeah. So I don't. I think he's going to absorb a lot of that mythic value. But I think, like I said, I think we're going to see a lot of $2, $3, $4 rares, maybe the occasional, $5 or $6 rare. And that's where the value of the set's going to be. The other thing is, you have to remember, we have the invocations as well. Now, Desolation Angel is kind of a poop invocation. And, there's a lot of other ones in here that you're just like, did we really need this? But, I mean, a lot of these are used pretty heavily, whether it be in EDH or be in, modern or even legacy.
I was going to say, because what's not poop is an invocation when you open it, because nobody sees it coming. Guy next to me in a match got to daze his opponent with an invocation daze.
I saw that. Tremendous. I saw that happen against a Nicol Bolas.
That's got to make the feel bad. It's like, you're the player who spent all that time building up to your Nicol Bolas, which is the capstone for that deck, right? It's the absolute best thing you're going to do, and then it gets dazed.
Yeah, and then he dazed it. He's like, I've been holding that for your Nicol Bolas the entire game. But no, I mean, this isn't the best batch. There's no Force of Will in here, mm-hmm. like in these invocations. There's no one invocation that's going to be $300, but the Damnation one, yeah, that's an easy probably $50. I think these are I think these are undervalued because of how much people hate the hate the whole invocation border, which I agree with them, but you give it a couple years. I mean, all the masterpieces right now are being bought up like crazy. Like, they're spiking hard in price.
Okay, let's talk about the invocations and the invocation border, because I took a really hard look at them, the ones that were opened. I didn't open one, but the ones that were open, and I've determined what I don't like, what really I don't like about them, and what will keep me from probably trading for them for legacy decks. It's the hieroglyphic print on the card name. I'm okay with the border and the way that it looks, but it's so hard to read the damn name on the thing and everything else. That's what turns me off, and this is the beginning of Sean's cranky old man, you kids get off my lawn time.
No, I agree with you. I mean, the choke looks like it says choking. We had Hazoret the Pervert in the last
right,
one.
Right, that's what I go to, yeah.
Yeah, and they cleaned up. I will say, I don't know what they did to it, but it's cleaner in the actual card text now. It's easier to read, and maybe it's just because of the pictures. I had only seen a couple of these invocations, but they seem a little easier to read. But I mean, it's going to get to a point where these are going to be kind of like, oh, you know what? That's cool. You got the invocations. Somebody who maybe 4 or 5 years from now didn't get to play during this set, and they're like, mm-hmm. oh, those are awesome. Because they're never going to do this border again, there, and never will. So these are unique. These are going to hold some, especially long term value. And there's some of these that I'm just like, they're really, really cheap. And if, I had the spare capital right now to do it, I would probably snatch up a bunch of these because I think they're at a super low value right now. I mean, the invocation cap size is $40 in Star City, and the F&M promo that's been super rare forever is $30.
Right. So it's giving you an opportunity right there financially. But we can agree, whether you want to call them masterpiece series or invocations or whatever, this is the third set they've done it in. And if you're ranking them number 1, 2, and 3, you can debate the Battle for Zendikar versus Kaladesh, but I think everybody's agreeing these are number three, period.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I agree 100%, but I do think a lot, it seems like a lot of people are forgetting, you know, even with the record low dollars on it, you know, outside of No Mercy, Avatar of Woe, and Desolation Angel, the rest of them are pretty heavily played between the constructed formats or cube formats.
And any of those I would have put in my pre-release deck if I would have opened one of them. Yes, they would have been fantastic.
Forbid, yeah. Probably you can't really count Forbid. But yeah, I mean, like any of these, yeah.
See, all... I played in the Forbid era. Do you know how much fun I would have had opening a Forbid?
It's just not, you know, it's not played that much. But I mean, like...
Well, no, it's been completely outclassed in Legacy. But in Limited, Forbid is still absolutely broken.
But a lot of these, there, I mean, people are going to run towards them for, like, Cube and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. We already had people asking who are Cube aficionados at my LGS about various invocations. The Days was the big one, obviously, that people were after, and he didn't move it. But I think he will, because if I remember correctly, that gentleman said he doesn't play Legacy. So it's really of no value in EDH unless you want to show off the fact that you got an invocation Days. So, I think he'll be one of those people that in the next couple of weeks decides it's time to move this for value. So we'll see how those all end up. But the impact those are going to have will be very interesting financially. One more kind of financial thing before we tackle another topic or two. We were talking about this set being concentrated in a few cards. Do you move the cards now? Because that's what I was seeing a lot of, where people... most pre-releases want to hold on to those Planeswalkers. People wanted to hold on to their Nicol Bolas. But other than that, people were essentially value trading the brand new rares and mythics away on the spot. Is that where we're at right now?
Yeah, I mean, typically, financially, you always want to move them. It doesn't matter if it's the high mark, unless there's just a card that, you know, like Smuggler's Copter, where you're like, I'm going to get every Smuggler's Copter because this card is amazing. You know, those were pre-selling for like $2. Mm-hmm. And same way with Gideon. Gideon was very low at the very beginning. But if there's some cards you ID as like, these are very valuable cards, they just haven't caught on yet, keep those. But the rest, you always, always want to move. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got a Nimble Instructionist that was the pre-release promo, and I traded for it at... like $13. Yeah, it's a little high, but everything he picked out my binder, you know, I had paid a couple bucks for. So, it, you know, they were worth more than that. They were, you know, we had even value on trade wise, but I was like, essentially in my mind, I'm like, okay, I just paid $5 for this Nimble Obstructionist foil. I'm okay with that. So, yeah, I would say move everything you can.
Pardon me while I pour another vodka tonic here as we do this episode of Byhards. This is, as we said at the outset, a very casual, let your hair down kind of episode. Ooh, that was an aggressive enough pour with my tonic that I don't even need to stir it coming out of that. The one card that was cropping up with a lot of talk around it was Locust God. I know we touched on this a little bit and how good the Haste Flyers are earlier. It was split almost amongst the red-white/control players at the shop. If you want it and how many you want. Basically, it was thought to be the only thing holding it back is Gear Hulk. You have Torrential Gear Hulk at the 6 spot, which is most likely plain just better. And the Locust God is never going to see standard that Gear Hulk isn't in, because those two sets will rotate together. This is an interesting one for me, and it's going to have financial ramifications. If it becomes a sideboard option, and that's where I see it, or if it's main deck... You were playing in Theros. You remember when every control deck played the, quote, state-mandated one Kyranos in the sideboard, the red-blue god. I think the Locust God may end up filling that role as the one extra threat you want in a control match. I see a lot of similarities between the two beyond their color pairing and god status as to how they affect the game in control matchups. Are we going to see maybe is that a relevant observation for maybe using as a guide when you're talking about financial impact, when to get it, ceiling, floor, that sort of thing?
Well, the Gearhawks are very, very powerful, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's enough, like just artifact hate comes into play. Tapped, you want to call it, you know, other random hate that I think this Locust God will kind of see a good mix in the main decks, but it depends on the removal that is being played by your non-control decks. So if they're seeing a lot of removal that does like 4 damage to creatures, you probably don't want to play the Locust God. If you're seeing removal that's just straight removal, or if you're seeing removal that's you know, attacking artifacts, then Locust God is really good. The key with Locust God is that if you play it turn 6, let's say you're down, you know, 8 life or something like that, you play turn 6, it's got flying, and how much does Glorybringer do?
4.
Yeah, it does 4. So if you see a lot of Glorybringer being played, you know, you don't want that. But if you play this turn 6 and it kills, or it block, even if it chumps blocks something, it goes right back to your hand, then you play turn 7, you have a land untapped. You know, with that one land, maybe you're playing another spell. You know, then turn 8, you play it, and then you play an untapped land. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, some cycling mana open. So I think it's
you're an optimistic young man is what I'm learning. You're very optimistic, because we remember the thing that scares me the most about this is we live in a format whose defining removal spell is Grasp of Darkness.
Yeah, and that's it depends if grass, and I think this argument or this discussion is a discussion for after October too. In the current meta, I don't think, other than coming in against us, you know, like you said, like Karanos did, it's not a non-discussion until everything kind of rotates out in October. Mm-hmm. But if you see a lot of that black removal spell, the Hour of Glory, then obviously you don't want to be playing it. But I mean, just having those chump blockers, you know, the 1/1 blue and red insect creatures with flying, I mean, that's a huge, huge deal. Even if they're chump blocking, if you've got 2 or 3 of them and they kill, you know, they Glorybringer and they kill your Locust God, then you chump block with one of these Locust, and then all of a sudden their Glorybringer is exerted, you play that Locust God out, and then you can make some more Locust the next turn. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think it's going to see a good mix, because one of the big problems with the Torrential Gearhulk is that a lot of times if you're not flashing back the 4-mana, what's the 4-mana draw spell that everyone plays?
The Glimmer of Genius, which is interesting because that is, for decks that have no use for the energy, been completely replaced by Hieroglyphic Illumination, because you can cycle it for the 1 early or get the 2 later. So I think that's going to be the interesting debate.
Yeah, and that's going to, you're going to get into that debate, because people have kind of tuned down the Torrential Gearhulks in some places because they're like, well, I'm just getting back, you know, a sensor. Like, that's what's in my graveyard. Stuff like that, where it's just like, okay, I've got a big beefy creature that's got flash essentially with a very minor upside. And with Locust God, if you have additional mana untapped, you can cycle cards and make it, it's an uncounterable cycle. So, I mean, they can't counter your Glimmer of Genius, and you're still drawing cards to make these insects. So, I don't know. It's going to have to shake itself out, but I think this is a conversation we have once everything's kind of rotated out, you know, in October, September, October timeframe.
So we have the sealed for pre-release, Matt. In the tradition at most LGSs, and this is certainly what we're doing at mine, is then you have the draft on release weekend. Did anything surprise you from sealed at pre-release that you're now reevaluating for draft? I had one that did to me, Spellweaver Eternal. And this is a one to have a reevaluation on, because it's a common. That means you're going to see it a lot in drafts. This is the 1 and a blue for a 2/1 with prowess, but it also has afflict 2. So whenever it's going to deal 2 damage minimum every time you turn it sideways. That's very aggressive for a 2-drop blue creature. The downside is it's 1 butt, which leaves you open to various things, as we all know, in Limited. But this Spellweaver Eternal, this was the most impressive card to me this weekend, and the one that I misevaluated the most. There were things I expected to be good coming in. We knew from Amonkhet that Inoketra's name was good in aggressive decks. We kind of knew those kinds of things. But this Spellweaver Eternal, this was the one that opened my eyes and kind of changed my opinion of it. Did you have a similar experience, or maybe a card that you thought was going to be good that turned out to be, well, frankly, poop?
The you know, that Eternal, once I got afflicted with that thing once, it got hit by Magma Spray every time I could possibly play it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you're 100% right on that. That was just crazy. The one that I was surprisingly good for us, for myself and during the team tournament, well, you mentioned Sandblast already. That was really good.
Yeah.
Was Aven of Enduring Hope. That was one of them. That's the 3/3 flyer that when it comes, enters the battlefield, you gain 3 life. Disposal Mummy, it was very handy to have. That's a 2/3 for 3 that you exile target card from an opponent's graveyard when it enters the battlefield. But the big one that just did some major work was the direct damage spell that's 3 mana, and I'm drawing a blank on what it's called.
Open Fire. It gives you the chance to do 3 to either the player or the creature, and yes, that did work all day.
Yeah, Open Fire. We in our team tournament, we had 3 of those. And afterwards, we were rebuilding our deck, and we're like, why did we only play 2 of these? We should have played all 3 of these. And then we had the Lava Axe. Inferno Jet was surprisingly good every time.
Really? I mean, because I cut that from my decks.
See, we cut in my seal pool, my first seal pool alone, I had one, and I had 2, and I played 1, and it was, maybe it was the nature of my deck being aggro, but I actually brought the other one in later in the tournament. And then the other one, the other tournament we had, we had 3 of them, 3 of those, and we played 2 of them. And we actually debated about whether bringing in a 3rd or not.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it was, I'm like, man, Lava Jet was, or Lava Axe was good. Like, you know, it's 25%, over 25% of their life total, vast majority of the time. And the final one I really wanted to mention that was really, really good, and this goes back to kind of like the desert ones, was the Gilded Ceradon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's the 4/4 for 5 that when it attacks, if you have a desert or there's one in your graveyard, a target creature can't block this turn. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of these commons, uncommons that were really good. Sunset Pyramid, just, that could be, very possibly, that could be an early pick 2, pick 3 style of card.
Yeah, there is. I'm looking at that Gilded Ceradon right now. I've got a pile of stuff from it this weekend. The other one that I was super impressed by this weekend, I thought I had one sitting here. I want to make sure that it is a common before I say this. Oh, here we go. Here it is. Granitic Titan, and it is a common. The 6-drop 5/4 menace in red, but it has cycling too. That was so good all weekend because it let me keep the pressure up in my red-white deck early by cycling through to either find lands or find my other 2-drop, 3-drop cards. And a couple of times the game went late. It is almost impossible when you're trying to defend yourself from a 5/4 menace creature to do so with a straight face and not get blown out by a removal spell. I thought that was really impressive. And at the common slot, if you can afford to give it a go, it was good all weekend for me as one of those cards that you think, maybe. I cycled it probably 10 times more than I played it. But the 2 or 3 times I actually put it in play in a long game, your opponents are so afraid to commit 2 things to it. And there are very few things. You have Sandblast, you have Electrify, that do 4 or 5 damage to a creature in limited. So that's one, I mean, it gets around impeccable timing, it gets around all of those things. So that's one that kind of stood out to me, and I'll be looking for that as well. It was a lot of fun to play those and play a little bit different style deck over this weekend at pre-release. Episode 1 of Byhards. Matt, this has been a lot of fun. What else, if anything, has kind of been on your mind? This is a week that Wizards doesn't do a lot of, quote, news, because they want the pre-release to take center stage, obviously. And I think it's going to have a little different feel as we roll out through the release and then the standard tournaments after that, because there's actually a GP before the Pro Tour with the new setup. So do you think that's good? Do you like the new setup? I mean, this is going to be kind of uncharted waters for us as a Magic community.
I think they're making too many changes, and this refers back to what happened today, and then we're recording on Monday the 10th. I think they're making too many changes too quickly. I mean, we'll obviously talk about this next week on Tryhards, but the new reporting, did you read about the new reporting about how they're going to report deck lists now?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, essentially they're not going to put nearly as much information, because they said that by them releasing information, it solves the format too quickly.
Now, is this just Magic Online, or is this going to be for GPs? Because if people can't mine GPs for information, I think you're going to see a lot of frustration from the community, and this actually reverts to a hugely advantageous situation for pros or those with highly connected networks who can share that information, and it cuts out the average player.
Yeah, no, it's going to just be for Magic Online, but, I mean... They, you know, they're essentially saying, well, you know what? We gave you too much information, so you saw the format too quick. So now we're just going to cut it back. But pros get a lot of their information from Magic Online. But you're right. The common person, you know, if you or I were going to a GP or going to, you know, by some chance we were going to the Pro Tour, you know, where would we go for our information? I mean, we'd have a few GPs. You know, maybe now we have one GP. Between now and, you know, the Pro Tour, but then if there's only if they only post like one deck list a day, which there's not an exact amount of what they're posting, mm-hmm. I mean, where the hell are we going to get our information, because the pro teams are going to outclass us so quickly.
I am of a hugely split mind about this, so this might take a second to explain, so hang with me for a minute. I loved the era that I played in when the only information you had was the monthly release of Scry magazine in the early 90s, because it felt like an open brewer's paradise at that point. I mean, this was an era where Wizards did not release the full set contents, and you had to piece it together and would be literally surprised that your opponent had a card that you hadn't seen before, because there was nowhere to find it online. There was no full set preview, spoiler, whatever you want to call it. So I love that era of sort of wonder and invention and brewing. But I also resent the fact that Wizards is trying to recreate that in microcosm by artificially restricting information. And I think this is part of my greater worldview bleeding over into Magic. Yes, restrictions breed creativity, but artificial restrictions create resentment. And I'm worried that this is going to clash with Wizards' ultimate goal.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I don't understand. I don't understand how all these other games, you know, you have Eternal Hex, you know, Hearthstone, all these other games can release literally every deck that was played, including like 05 decks.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they still have healthy metagames. I mean, I think this is a pointing a finger of, and I understand they can react on a dime to tweak card, you know, like, or turn, you know, react very quickly to tweak those cards.
Sure, you have a digital only game, yeah.
But I think that goes more towards, you know, hey, design better sets. Don't limit the information, because all you're going to do is the people who do this for, you know, professionally, you know, the pros, they're going to have a huge advantage. You're creating that, you know, if you want to call it the wealth gap within Magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Melissa DeTora back at Wizards now, and part of the enshrined, whether you want to call it the official version of the Future League, or you want to call it whatever they got, the competitive play outlet group, whatever BS corporate name they've given it. Her article this last week detailed the changes that they did for a namesake card from Hour of Devastation. Hour of Devastation, the 3 red sorcery, and she went over how their findings in the FFL impacted the changes that they made to it. If they are going to stick with that, if that wasn't just a boilerplate, we're going to tell you this and then we're not going to show you anything anymore, that's bad. But if they're going to actually stick with using the results that the pros they're bringing in, and these pros have to feel like they're making a contribution to the community, because they are taking themselves out of the competitive scene in order to do this behind closed doors in Renton. But I thought her article detailing that and the changes that were made along the way were a breath of fresh air to me, Matt, because it gave you a look-see into not only how much R&D is relying on them, but how the development is fluid. So I think if Magic keeps their development fluid and really listens to these people that they brought in, then you'll end up with good results. Because the original version of Hour of Devastation she talks about was unplayable, and now you have a card that could actually be a powerhouse.
Yeah, I read that actually when you or when we started this call. I was actually finishing reading that article and then putting the – I have to imagine she talked about the all the hate cards, you know, the five-color color hosers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to imagine that those were a large portion of it was coming from the future league, where they're saying, hey, we need these hosers. I mean, you know, how good is Torrential Gearhawk when you're playing a control shell – and you play Jace's Defeat against it.
Well,
I mean,
but see, there's a key difference in the way they've developed hosers this time around as opposed to historically. Historically, they gave the hosers to the opposition color. The fact that they put the hosers in the same color now there's a real cost to want to beat that card, like let's say Jace or Torrential Gearhulk or Nimble Obstructionist or whatever your power blue card is. You have to actually play blue to get the most efficient answer. You have to play black to get the most efficient answer to a black card. I love that drawback, but also that power. Whereas the old cycle, which was, I'll just take, you know, red elemental blast, blue elemental blast. You got to counter another color. You had choke. You had, you know, chill, boil, whatever those were, karma. You got to do it without sort of leaving your comfort zone. So I actually think the new iteration is more challenging for deck builders to use.
I think we're going to see a lot of multicolored decks because people are going to play these. I mean, mm-hmm. Chandra's Defeat, I'm not sure, but that might just neuter, you know, Glorybringer. I mean, Gideon's Defeat, that seems like a super easy answer to stupid Gideon now.
Well, that's the first. I think Gideon's Defeat is the one that gets adopted. Obviously, these are sideboard cards, but I think of the defeats, Gideon is the absolutely easiest include going forward from now. And I think that Chandra is probably second because of the reason you mentioned that it hits the Glorybringer.
Yeah, and I just all of them. I mean, keeping the mana cost low was nice. Being able to counter, you know, blue spells for two. Mm-hmm. You know, that's essentially, you know, sometimes it's a better negate, sometimes it's a worse negate, but it's negate. I mean, you know, it's a counter spell. It's just, I think that's going to make, this is going to kind of forge a new path that they're going to take with the future league if they continue to listen to what they say.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, what?
This has been the first episode of Byhards. Was it fun? It was fun for me.
Yeah, no, actually, I like just being able to kind of just spitball a little bit, too.
Let your hair down. I mean, you don't have any hair to let down, so that's just like a saying to you.
And you shaved yours, so, you know, that's became a little bit less of a friend when that happened.
I showed that picture of Sean with the Thor hair to some people, and they were like, can we, like, raise some money to get you to do that again? Like, we're all in. And I said, all you have to do, like, I loved it, all you have to do is convince my girlfriend. And Lori has said to me, this is the comment that made me cut it off. I had hair past my shoulders. Maybe I'll post one on the Patreon page. Her comment to me was, there are certain times that I feel like I'm with a girl. So there was a reference to the tickling of the inner thigh and so forth. I'll let you use your imagination after that. So that was when I cut all my hair off. And of course, being me, I didn't just like cut it back. I went from having hair past my shoulders to shaving my head. So she freaked out and I almost left me over that because it was too big of a change. She thought I looked a little bit too much like you, Matt, I think is what she said. Oh, by the way.
Uh-oh.
I have to say this. So before the first pre-release at my LGS this weekend, one of our friends of the show, who is also a patron, Your Drunk Pilot, made some time and got to pre-release for the very first one. And he texted me. I kind of heard this off the corner of my mind, and he texted me a reminder later in the day. He said, best joke of the day. We were talking about tryhards. They were talking about the podcast a little bit. And one of the regulars, who you know and I'm not going to bring his name up here. He said loudly in front of everyone, I love the cast, and Sean and Brian are great. I just can't stomach giving Hurley any money. So you're the reason why we don't have at least one more patron on Patreon. We love all of you. By the way, thanks to David and Victor, who jumped on and pledged since the last episode of Tryhards. This isn't your official welcome. You'll get that next week when Tryhards resumes. Because if you weren't, you know, paying attention at the beginning of the show, Byhards is not a continuity of Tryhards. This is a non-continuity episode whenever one of us is gone. So with Brian on vacation, just Matt and I hanging out a little bit. So
I can't stomach giving Hurley any money, huh?
You know what? I think we should wrap it up on that. And if you pledge $5 or more, you can listen to the pre and post show. And I will tell Hurley who said that in the post show. So this
but
has been...
It's going to be a guessing game because I want to guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly how it's going to go down. I'm going to be your Peter Tamarkin. And you're going to say no whammies, and it's going to go down like that. So
before we close out, the people that are my friends that are supposed to come in town this weekend are still kind of up in the air. So there is an open in Cincy, you know, that's about 90 minutes away from me this weekend. And if they don't come down, I will probably run up there, maybe do some side events, do a bunch of card selling. If I happen to do that, I'll post it on Twitter and I'll post it on the Patreon page. So if anybody wants to meet up, I may be in the SCG Open in Cincinnati.
If you do that, let me know. I'm going to have you pick up a couple of things for me that I need for various decks. So that'll be awesome. All right, Matt, thank you so much for hanging out. Brian's on vacation this week. This non-continuity episode's Byhards episode one. Whenever someone is gone, this is how we're going to post so that you get a little bit of something of what we're up to. We appreciate you. We didn't want to skip a week. Other casts have done that. That's not something that we want to do. I understand that not all of the tight editing and production is present, but every once in a while, I think it's fun to kind of pull the curtain back and let your hair down. And now and again, these episodes of Byhards will pop up, and you'll get a little window into that. For Matt, for Brian, who's on vacation, I'm Sean. I'll borrow one thing from Tryhards. Oh, you brave soul, making it to the end of this outing. Hope you enjoyed it. Tryhards, back next week.